You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
You're John Chespagon.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer. Streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
It is June, and I want to give a shout out to all the wonderful people who go to patreon.com and support Seth Lustig Bruce. Let's give a wonderful thank you to Jeff Ulmer, Sylvia Nell, Liz Brunson, Fernando Santamaria Lozano, Steve Van Sack, Rob Barnett, Randy Brown, Crystal Carroll, Bella Pori, John Munson, Betsy Hodges, Levi Petrie, Stephen Malio, Captain America, Dale Hosack, Terry Smith, Anna Lynn, Chris Bloom, and Mary Thomas. Thank you so much for being here and providing support. Because of these wonderful people, Seth Lustig Bruce continues to happen. For now, on to the podcast.
When I was like 13 or 14, like right before high school, I like to sleep late, as many teenagers do.
Sure.
So in summer, you know, my dad was an early riser, mm-hmm. and he would want us kids up and outside and, you know, not sleeping the day away. And he came up with a strategy to get my ass out of bed that wasn't just pounding on my bedroom door. He would crank Born in the USA at full volume to wake me up to get my day started. And when I was at that age, you would think that I would like really hate and like resent that song because that was the tool that was used to get me to, you know, wake up. But even at the time, I had to kind of say to myself, well, it is a good song. I do like this music, so I can't get that angry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Seth Lustig Bruce, your podcast all about Bruce Springsteen, his music, and mostly his fans. I am your host, Jesse Jackson. You just missed about 12 minutes of gabbing before we hit record. I am worried that my guest and I may go long, but luckily we checked and neither one of us have anything pressing. Joe, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It is a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. Well, I loved you reached out to me, and we're going to get to a little more specifics. I appreciate the nice words. You're friends with Stephanie, and I adore their podcast. I think they are just so much fun, and they were a great guest. They just were, they seemed to have a lot of fun. They told me they enjoyed talking to me, so I hope they did. So that was really good. You do a podcast too. So tell us a little about yourself.
Yes, I do a podcast. It's called Play That Rock and Roll. I started it back in March of 2020 was when the first episode dropped. Something else happened around that time. I don't quite remember what, but I had actually been planning to do a podcast for about a year before I started it. So I just happened to line up with something that left me with a lot of free time to do,
exactly,
to do it. So I've been, you know, rolling with it since then. It's, we do about 1.5 or 2 episodes every 2 months. So, or every month. So it's not the most regular thing ever, but, you know, each episode we do put a lot of care into it. And, some of the episodes are my solo shows where it's just me talking about an artist or subject. And some episodes are interviews. We've had some good guests in the last couple of years, authors, content creators, recording artists. And I also have my songwriter series with my co-host Chris, in which we deep dive discographies of so far songwriters like Bob Dylan and Warren Zevon.
Nice. By the way, I did a lot of podcasting in that year too.
Why did we have so much free time? What was going on? I can't remember.
my wife has a theory. You know how some people say that their knee will hurt when it's raining outside or, you know, something. My wife says she has a theory that the more my life is out of control, the more I podcast. that is my, like, what she, you know, and so she, every once in a while she has to, okay, Jesse, like, rein it in. Just, are you okay? Like, you seem to be podcasting a lot. What's going on? And I can't disagree with her. I think there is a, not a grain of truth. I think there's a lot of truth in that. So, well, good. Well, I look forward to checking out some episodes, and I will hopefully return the favor when you need a guest.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, so let's start out with, I always like to start at the beginning, talk about growing up. Well, where did you grow up, and what kind of music did your family listen to?
So I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, lived here my whole life, and growing up, actually, one of the artists who was very prevalent in my youth was Bruce Springsteen. My dad is a huge Springsteen fan. He saw Bruce several times back in the 70s. And the early 80s. The most famous Springsteen show in Milwaukee is, of course, the 1978 Bomb Scare show. My dad didn't go to that one, but he was at some other shows in the mid-70s. He has a story of seeing Bruce up close in a theater show in 1975 or something like that. So when I was a kid, I would see not just the CDs laying around, but you know, his old LPs. So the name Bruce Springsteen was familiar to me probably even before any of the music. Beyond that, like, my mom was a big fan of Neil Young, Stevie Wonder, Foo Fighters. So sort of that classic era of rock and also R&B and soul. That kind of thing was what my parents listened to when I was growing up. I later got into 80s music, and what was funny was they both, like, hated the 80s. So when I became a fan of, like, 80s pop, they both gave me crap, saying, like, we were there when this was new, and we hated it then. So that was my teenage rebellion.
That was my next question, was, it sounded like you embraced their music, but you went through a rebel stage. I love that. And Penn Jillette in his podcast often talks about that. He thinks rock and roll is about rebellion. So when he hears, oh, I love classic rock, he's like, no, you're wrong. At 16, you should not love classic rock. You should be doing something that your parents hate. That is the spirit of rock and roll.
That is true. And I agree with that. And it was kind of funny because when I was in high school, the bands that my friends were into were groups like Panic at the Disco and The Killers and indie. And, you know, a lot of that stuff I have some appreciation for now, but in high school, that's what I felt everyone was listening to, and I just had a hard time getting into it. But there, so I think what attracted me to 80s music and also classic rock as a whole was the fact that my contemporaries, very few of them were listening to this stuff or even knew who any of these artists were. So the fandom was kind of personal. It was like, this is my music that I have that none of my other friends know about. And I think that sort of thing is very common for teenagers too.
Yeah, I think so too. One of the things that we change and do, like my parents, I grew up on country music. It just I loved, like I embrace the fact that as I started growing older, I learned rock and roll, but I never lost the love for Merle Haggard or Hank Williams or Willie Nelson, right? Johnny Cash. So yeah, there it is, and certainly when you're young, I'm arguing that we should listen to the AM rock station, not the country station, but I get that part. I get it.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shout It Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus meal plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
Hey folks, Stefan Shirazi and Renee Richardson here from the Metallica Report.
And we are proud members of the Pantheon podcast family, where the best of music and podcasts unite.
We've got something pretty cool for you. We're giving away an exclusive Metallica merch package worth over $250.
That's a whole lot of scary guys, skulls, M72, and other sought-after Metallica swag. And we've made it easy for you to win. Follow and share the Metallica Report, and you're in the game. Go to pantheonpodcast.com/Metallica, enter your email, and hit that button to be entered to win.
And just like that, you're eligible for our monthly exclusive Metallica merch package.
And guess what, rockers? You can enter every month. So just do it. And while we love our global brothers and sisters, the lawyers won't let us ship outside the U.S.
Can you remember, Joe, when your fandom from Bruce went from, oh, yeah, that's who my dad listens to, oh, wait, maybe this guy's got a little something?
Yeah, it's sort of a funny reason why. When I was like 13 or 14, like right before high school, I like to sleep late, as many teenagers do. Sure. So in summer, you know, my dad was an early riser, mm-hmm. and he would want us kids up and outside and, you know, not sleeping the day away. And he came up with a strategy to get my ass out of bed that wasn't just pounding on my bedroom door. He would crank Born in the USA at full volume to wake me up to get my day started. And when I was at that age, you would think that I would like really hate and like resent that song because that was the tool that was used to get me to, you know, wake up. But even at the time, I had to kind of say to myself, well, it is a good song. I do like this music, so I can't get that angry. And so as I learned more about Springsteen, I don't know if I had like a moment where it dawned on me that he was beyond, he was more than just someone my dad liked. I think I just always inherently liked his music. Like, okay. I think when my dad would play his tapes or whatever in the car, I just subconsciously was like, yep, this is good music. Mm-hmm. And I never had I definitely had a resistance to some of the other music my parents liked, but Springsteen was not the case. I just always enjoyed his singing and his music. So I don't know if there was ever a turning point, because I don't think I ever had a negative opinion about him.
Is there a point, and or is there? Can you articulate why you enjoyed him?
I think for me, it comes down to that when this is subjective for everybody. Everybody has, I think, a different artist that they would say is like the core of like what rock and roll means to them. And I think if you distill my music taste, my philosophies on music down to its core, you know, what makes rock and roll, mm-hmm. like singular rock and roll, to yeah. me, that's Bruce Springsteen.
Okay.
Everything else kind of is maybe right next to him, maybe very close in that core, but the absolute center of the genre, again, subjectively, sure. I would say is Bruce.
I like that. I like that thought a lot. One of the things I just had, I had Robert Santinelli, who is currently the executive director of Bruce's archives. And before he did this job, he asked, you know, he was in charge with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He helped build that. And I asked him, you know, with all the discussion and everyone discusses, you know, what do you feel about people saying, you know, why is Willie Nelson getting into the, you know, file Hall of Fame? Why Dolly Parton? And he said, rock and roll is as much an attitude as it is a music. And so he says Willie Nelson is as rock and roll as you can get. And
yeah.
I kind of love that. I love that a lot. So I always like, Joe, I like to preface this question with, the amount of times you've seen Bruce perform live is not a fair barometer of how big a fan you are. A lot of that has to do with where you live, your economic situation, how old you are. You know, if you're a 60-something guy that, you know, grew up in Jersey in the, you know, in the 70s, good chance you saw Bruce a lot. Versus, oh, yeah. You know, I'm a 60-something guy that grew up in Louisiana, you know,
okay.
Not get a lot of chances. How about you? What is, do you count how many times you've seen him? And if so, what's the number?
Four.
Okay.
I have seen Bruce four times. First in 2008.
Okay.
And most recently, just 2 months ago.
So let's talk about that. You did, I thought, a really good video review of the show. So I'll start out with first, how much trouble did you have getting tickets? And also, I am not going to ask the question because it makes me mad. Did you have to get a second mortgage on your house? I mean, yes, if you want to go to Madison Square Garden and be in the pit, you're going to pay a lot of money, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But so how much trouble was it getting tickets?
So I got lucky, in a sense, at least. Okay. They announced that he was playing the Fiserv Forum here in Milwaukee. And the morning that they went on sale, yeah, I had my computer, you know, queued up, ready to go. And I've been in this position before for other shows where I've been burned and didn't get the tickets I wanted. Yeah. So I was kind of basically prepared to just be shit out of luck.
Yeah.
So I logged in. You know, it put me in the queue, started waiting, and then suddenly I was in, and I immediately went right to the nosebleed seats, to the cheapest price range, and clicked the first four I saw off an aisle, and hit add to cart, and crossed my fingers, and it went through.
Okay.
Now, the cheapest price level for our show was... what was it, like $189 or something like that? It was almost $200. It was basically $200 per seat.
Okay.
Which was steep, but I knew I had two friends that wanted to come with, and I, you know, knew I could give the fourth to my dad if I couldn't find a fourth person to come
okay.
with. So, good.
Okay.
Yeah, but I felt like, given all that we had read about the troubles with the tickets on this tour, I felt I had pulled off a coup. Okay. I honestly didn't expect I was going to get the tickets. So I'm glad I did, but they were pricey and it was nerve wracking for a second.
Yeah. So overall thoughts on the show. Let's talk about it.
Well, positive all the way through. All of my expectations were like met and exceeded, which I think is sort of the expectation for Springsteen fans. When you expect right. to see him, you don't just expect a good show. You expect, especially if you've seen him before, a show that's going to blow your mind. That's going to yeah. top pretty much everything you've seen before. And, you know, we've wrestled with that because he is getting older. And a lot of his contemporaries are retiring. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's not fair to put that expectation on him. Yeah. So I tried not to do that, but it didn't matter. In the end, it was worth every penny, worth all the hassle. And, you know, I loved the songs that he played. He surprised us with Death to My Hometown, which is a song I really like from... the 2012 album.
Yeah, Wrecking
That's
Ball.
One of my favorite songs of his from the last yeah. 20 years, you know, so that was a nice treat for Milwaukee. And it wasn't, of the four times I've seen him, this most recent one, I wouldn't say was the best, because the best time I ever saw him was the first time. And I sort of think like that might be a common thread for a lot of Bruce fans. The first time you see him, that's something special.
When was the first time you saw him?
So the first time I saw him was in 2008. It was as a part of Harley Davidson's 105th anniversary celebration weekend.
Okay.
Milwaukee has Harley Davidson here, and every 5 years they have a big anniversary celebration party. Famously, in 2003, their 100th anniversary, they were going to do a surprise guest. And at the time... there were a lot of rumors thinking that was going to be the Rolling Stones or somebody like that. The surprise guest ended up being Elton John. And in 2003, that did not play for the Harley Davidson crowd. Unfortunately, I like Elton John.
Yeah, I do too. But I could see how that's because, you
there's
know,
a mismatch there.
Yeah, it's because over the past few years, there's that resurgent because of the film. You know, everyone's kind of going, oh, wait a minute. This guy has countless number of hits, you know?
Yeah.
2003, he's that guy that sang that song about Princess Diana, right?
Right.
One of the things, which is unfair because I graduated high school in 77, and the first 8-track I ever bought with my own money was Elton John's Greatest Hits. 8-track, I'm telling you.
Oh, nice.
Right? You know, I loved, you know, your song and all these, you know, so yeah, that's kind of funny. So, okay. So 2003.
Unfortunately, it just didn't play here. And there's all kinds of reasons why. One of the big ones was, and I remember this, I wasn't even following like music. I was pretty young when this happened, but I remember the rumor around town was the Rolling Stones, but for whatever reason, it didn't happen. It was Elton, didn't go over well. It's kind of this legendary mistake, you know, here. So in 2008, I think Harley was still sort of reeling from that embarrassment. Yeah. So they wanted the most surefire, can't fail, everybody's going to love this artists. And that's when they announced Bruce. So I knew my dad had seen him all these times back in the 70s and 80s. I had never seen him at that point. And that was the year I was first getting into concerts. So I wanted to go. My dad wanted to go. And then just cherry on top, the concert itself landed on my 20th birthday.
Nice.
So we got tickets. We went. We just got general admission, but we were able to be in the right place at the right time. So when the VIP gates opened to sort of fill in the back end of that section, we were right there. So we were able to move up to the VIP area for a pretty good place to watch the show. Every couple of songs, Bruce would shout, "Happy birthday, Harley Davidson." And I would cover my ears for Harley Davidson and just imagine he was wishing me a happy birthday. And it was a great night. I mean, he, for the first hour and a half, I didn't recognize a single song he played, but I loved all of it. And he went on for almost 3.5 hours. It was just this just ridiculously long show, and the weather was beautiful and the crowd was into it. So it was just, it was, to this day, that's still my answer for best concert I ever went to, you know, for a multitude of reasons. And going to that show with my dad, who really raised me on this music and still loves Springsteen. He was at the same recent show that I was. It was like a great father-son night too.
I'm looking at the set list. and you got Wooly Bully as a cover.
That was the first song he played that I recognized.
Yeah. So now then, right, it's Gypsy Biker, Out in the Street, Radio Nowhere, Promised Land, Spirit in the Night, right? So that's good. Now, I had a similar issue. It wasn't my birthday, but I've told this story multiple times, so skip ahead 5 minutes, listeners. I had been a casual fan, certainly like everyone else had bought Born in the USA and the box set, and but kind of drifted apart. 89 was when we had our son. We were very active, going to a lot of local bands here in Dallas. Edie Brickell and the New Bohemians, a band called Brave Combo, which is a rock and roll polka band that's still performing. Sarah Hickman, who is a singer-songwriter. So just different bands. And so kind of rediscovered Bruce, and something was going on during the reunion tour. I couldn't go because of family responsibilities. So in 2002, The Rising, I was going to go. I had tickets. My wife's going with me. Our two of our best friends are going. And I had bought the Rising CD, but I hadn't really listened to it much. And I knew hardly any song. I mean, I knew nothing. But what I'd say is I felt like I had been dropped into a movie theater halfway through the movie, and I could tell it was a great movie. I just didn't know everything that was going on, but I knew that I wanted to see the front part of that movie. I was engaged. And so, in fact, someone just recently sent me a bootleg of that show. And I'm like going like, God, I wish, can I go back in time and be this guy listening to that and know what songs I'm getting? So yeah, I get that. You know, one of my other fandoms is Doctor Who. And the joke about usually your doctor is your first doctor, right?
Like,
Yeah, that's the one you get. So that's cool.
It's something about like Saturday Night Live that's similar to that too, right? Yes. Like, well, whoever your favorite cast is, whoever it was when you were 13, that kind of thing.
Exactly. I do think there's a lot to do that. And so I think that's great. So let's talk. You've talked about how much you love the show. Give me your thoughts on this last three albums: Western Stars, Letter to You, and then the covers album. You know, only the
The covers album really blew me away with the song that and he did it for us on this most recent show, Night Shift. That's a song that, unfortunately, at least seems to me, has sort of been lost to time. But that's a song that I really loved. I have that in my collection. And I used to work at a pizza place that was open until 3 in the morning.
Okay.
So Night Shift was not only on our playlist that we would listen to while working, but it was very relevant.
That was your
song that definitely holds some some meaning to me. Mm-hmm. And then hearing Bruce bust that out, you know, reminds me that man is just he knows music. You know, it's so easy to think an artist is kind of only does what they do, but he has a really, When you read about the bands that he likes, these are obscure, deep cut bands that, if you know them, you know they're very good. So seeing Bruce validate a song that I loved, and honestly in these last couple of years had kind of forgot about, mm-hmm. was a real treat. And I was just crossing my fingers that was going to be the one that he played from the new record when we saw him. And he did, and it sounded great. So I really love his version off of that. Yeah. Otherwise, I do recall listening to Western Stars. And I enjoyed that just fine. I will say, of the albums that he's done in the, we'll say post 2000, the one that means the most to me is Wrecking Ball.
Okay.
That was a record that really caught my attention and reminded me that he's still making good music, because it's really easy to like forget your favorite artists are still working.
Yeah.
And that was one that kind of reminded me that Bruce is still making stuff at a high quality, because I don't really remember listening to much of, like, what was it, Working on a Dream? I think I skipped Imagine. That one.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, the beauty of Wrecking Ball is, there's a little bit of Celtic influence in some of the stuff. Some wonderful songs. In fact, you know, we were talking just before we hit record, we've got that song knockout that by this time will have been released. But at one point it was a 3-3 tie and Jack of All Trades was one of the songs against something really, really also good. And I was like, because I love Jack of All Trades. It just is just, it is a wonderful song. I was lucky enough when my son and I went to New York to see him, he did that with strings. And that was beautiful. Yeah, that was beautiful. Yeah, that's really good. So awesome. Well, what, any disappointments in the show?
My buddy that I went with was late, so I had to go down to the ticket counter during the first couple songs to check him in. So I missed a couple of songs. That was a disappointment.
Yes.
But I could still hear the songs, and you know, so it wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah.
But no, because I knew every song he played except for he did one called. Oh, no, there were two he played that I didn't know. Mm-hmm. And I really like both of them. He did one called Pay Me My Money Down, which by the second verse I was singing along with, you know, because that's one of those lyrics where like you hear it once and you understand like, oh, I know what this song's about. And I'm singing along too. And then he did one that I wasn't familiar with called Burnin' Train. Mm-hmm. And that was also an enjoyable track. I think the only disappointment would be the disappointment in quotes.
Yeah.
And a lot of us feel that his discography is just too big for one show. And the songs you want to hear, you know, don't make the set list. So, you know, I've seen him play 4 times and I've never seen him play Born in the USA. And to me, as a kid, that's what I thought was like his biggest hit. That, you know, it still is one of his biggest ever, most recognizable hits. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I like that track. And, you know, I know he doesn't do it all the time. And I just haven't been lucky enough to catch him, you know, when he does.
Yeah. Pay Me My Money Down is from the Seeger Sessions.
Right.
I would love to hear live. I'm not a huge fan of that CD. And I talk about this too, that my issue is he doesn't play Froggy Went to Court in the way that my dad did. So therefore this is wrong. Right. It's just, because that's how I grew this up and it just doesn't sound right. There was a little bit of jokes that people thought that Pay Me My Money Down with all the discussion about the tour ticket may have been a deaf ear, but I would have loved to see it. And, you know,
I didn't even think of that. That's great.
And Burning Train from Letter to You is one I did not get. But both in Houston and Austin, he did If I Was the Priest, which was, you know, certainly something that you weren't expecting to get. Well, good. So let's go back to a little more generic, Joe. Are there albums or songs that mean a lot to you that tend to be on the rotation when you're needing a pick me up or needing to feel better? Talk to me a little bit about that.
The album Born in the USA is easily right alongside AC/DC's Back in Black. My musical comfort food.
Yeah.
These are the two safest records that I like every single song on them. And if, again, going back to that Harley Fest idea, if I just want to listen to the safest choice of what's going to put me in a good mood, something from Born in the USA. I, in particular, and this is probably one that's not popular amongst the Springsteen fans, is I'm really partial to I'm Going Down. And I used to play that song. I used to include that song in playlists for when I would have house parties back in college.
Sure.
And even though for the first couple parties, none of my friends knew that song, after a couple of months of that being in rotation, that became one of our late night sing-alongs. Yeah.
Yeah.
And another one that was the case was Badlands.
Yeah.
That's another one of my all-time favorite tracks.
Yeah.
But, you know, the 1-2 punch of Born in the USA and Cover Me are just such great album openers. And it has that bombast that I think some fans aren't crazy about, but that's really what I'm all about. Like, I like the spectacle of Born in the USA. I like that it is a big, loud, some might even say overindulgent record. I'm all about it. But on the flip side, the record that followed it, Tunnel of Love, also really registers with me. The title track for Tunnel of Love, Brilliant Disguise, these are two of my other favorite Springsteen songs. So, I like what he was doing in the 80s. And I like that. I would say that's fair for me to say for a lot of artists I like.
Yeah.
But I would say the stuff that I think the most of is probably the Born in the USA record, because that was the one I liked as a kid. You know, that's the one my dad blasted to wake me up with in the summers. And that's one that I've remained listening to all these years, probably more than the others.
Mm-hmm. What are you listening to now if you're not listening to Bruce?
Well, with doing a podcast, unfortunately or fortunately, if you're working on a specific project, you know, you're listening to the music that project is about.
Yes.
So recently I've really been listening to the last artist I did a podcast about that was a solo episode was Ronnie Spector. And Ronnie has some Springsteen ties. And she doesn't have the deepest discography. It's mm-hmm. not particularly expansive, but there's some absolute gold there, including the stuff she did with the E Street Band. Otherwise, outside of that, you know, episodes that I have planned, and I have planned because I listen to just a lot of that music. This is going to be another left field one. Molly Hatchet.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, this, like, every time I say that, whoever I say it to is like, what, really? And, like, yeah, because that's another one where, like, as a kid, well, I shouldn't say that, not as a kid, as a young record collector, I would see these album covers, these, you know, like, Conan the Barbarian-looking album covers of Molly Hatchet, and think, this would just be cool to own. Who cares what's on the record?
Mm-hmm.
And I bought a couple of those, and over the years, I started listening to them more often, and then recently I saw them in concert, so I thought I should do a podcast about them because they're a band that really nobody talks about.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, I've just been listening to a lot of all bands, Molly Hatchet, and there's some good stuff there. You know, it's not all gold, but there's some stuff I like.
Well, what I find myself doing is, like, I just heard about your podcast, so now I'm going to go check those podcasts. And I find the time that I used to spend listening to money, to music, I now listen to podcasts. And that is – and I'm happy because I enjoy the podcast. It is something I really enjoy, but every once in a while I go – and that's life, right? If you choose something means you're not choosing something else. And that's it. So something weird happened. Not weird. That's the wrong choice of words. But I do a Babylon 5 podcast where we're going through Babylon 5 in chronological order with two people that have never seen it.
Okay.
And so I'm the veteran. They're the rookies. And when we did Farscape, they were the veterans and I was the rookie. So it's been a fun little change.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That sounds fun.
Yeah. So, but one of the things we'll do is we'll just randomly pick another topic. We'll say, hey, we're going to watch Devs and let's discuss it, or The English, which was another series. And so I asked them to watch Western Stars, the film, to discuss it. And Karen liked it more than Lou did. But Lou, who's from Canada, said, now then, you've got me thinking music. Have you listened to the Tragically Hip? And I said, no, I haven't. I said, though I vaguely familiar with them. And so he said, well, they're such a Canadian band. I want you to listen. And I've really been impressed that I've been like, how did they not cross over into the US? Right? It just was really amazing. I asked my buddy that, like, he goes, it just never happened. And it's just weird. So it's kind of interesting at times when you find that, isn't it?
Yeah. Especially with like Canadian bands, there's a lot of really good Canadian bands that never crossed over that I think should have, you know, bands I think of like that, or at least to the States, you know, April Wine, the Kings. And then for whatever reason, like the worst ones crossover, like who asked for Nickelback or Justin Bieber? Come on. Come on, Canada.
That's funny. That's very funny. Very nice. Good.
But I will say, I can echo the sentiment about a lot of my what used to be music time when I would listen to music is now filled by podcasts because, you know, I work remote, luckily, and I get to just, as I'm working here at home, you know, have something playing. And I don't know. It's hard. Maybe it's harder to get tired of listening to podcasts because kind of you can switch from one to another. So I end up listening to music most of the time in the car, and I have basically a playlist that I keep on my iPod. I'm very old fashioned. I still have an iPod.
Right. Yay.
And it is a ever growing list of whatever song I stumble across. If I like it, it goes on the list. And I will say recently I added a whole bunch of Tina Turner music to that list because I recently saw the Tina Turner Broadway show in Chicago.
Ooh, nice.
And, you know, much like Ronnie Spector, just an incredible discography and maybe a blind spot for some rock fans because she's been off the road totally since like 2009. And you know, I've always wanted to see her in concert. So this Broadway show, which I'm not really a musical guy, I should say that up front. I was really drawn to going to see because I thought, man, how else am I ever going to see her music live? And it was a really good time. So
that's
she's
cool.
Definitely in my current listing.
Yeah, I will. You know, I love. Because of the Brian Wilson connection and how much he was competitive with the Phil Spector and that wall of sound, it's just a great voice. And yes, you're right. There is that Springsteen connection with her. That's cool. That's very cool. So what's next for the podcast? What else you got planned?
Well, what do we have coming up? Molly Hatchet is going to be an episode at some point.
Okay.
Another oddball pick, but one I'm into because he was a guest on the show, is Wang Chung. Okay. I talked to the lead singer of that band a couple years ago, and I've been meaning to do an episode about their career. That's a solo episode. The main thing, though, is I'm going to be continuing my Warren Zevon songwriter series with my co-host, Chris.
Okay, tell me what that is.
Yeah, so 2 years ago, we started a mini-series, I should say, called Dylan Through the Decades, where one episode at a time, we looked at Bob Dylan's discography decade by decade. So part one was Dylan in the 60s, part two, Dylan in the 70s, and so on. Well, last year we wrapped it up. We did 6 episodes of those all the way through. And we also interviewed a guy who wrote a pretty definitive biography about Dylan, a guy named Howard Soons. And we've done some other Bob Dylan content on the channel. And it was just so much fun and it went over really well that we decided we wanted to do it again about a different songwriter. we bounced a couple of names around, but it was my buddy Chris that suggested it. When he said Warren Zevon, I thought that's the right answer. And I've been reading two books about Warren, and we did part one, Warren Zevon in the 70s, and part two, Zevon in the 80s. And we have two more parts to do left. So the next episode that's coming up for that will be Warren Zevon in the 1990s.
That'll be cool. I'm a casual fan. I bought the last CD where, that I really enjoyed that CD a lot. Keep Me in Your Heart and, you know, a couple other things. You know,
there's going to be a vinyl reissue of that for Record Store Day this year.
Nice. Yeah. And like when Bruce does the cover of My Rides Here, I think it's really beautiful. So yeah, that'll be cool. I'll have to check that out. That's very cool.
Zevon is a guy that I said on the show that his lyrics are either going to make you bust out laughing or absolutely cry your eyes out.
Yeah.
Like it's one or the other.
Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if you've ever heard Bruce talk about that, where he said at some award show that when Brian Wilson married his surfer girl, he had two sons, Jackson Brown and Warren Zevon.
Oh. Yeah, I could see that. Yep.
I could too. I like, okay, I'll go with that. That sounds good to me.
Well, it's all that Southern California 60s, 70s thing, you know. Yep. And I like that Bruce has a strong affinity for that. You know, I know it's very trendy for, we'll say, music critics to talk poorly about the Eagles, right? Yeah. And in the same breath, they will praise Warren Zevon.
Right.
And that always cracks me up because the Eagles are all over Warren's records. And he was great friends with them. And they, like, you know, did backing vocals for him. And Springsteen himself has at least some appreciation for the Eagles. Because I remember when Glenn Frey passed away, Springsteen opened the show with Take It Easy.
Yes.
So, you know, it's cool. It's just cool to see those connections.
It really is, yes. So once again, what's the name of the podcast and where do you find it?
So the podcast is called Play That Rock and Roll. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts, but you should definitely seek us out on YouTube because I do a lot of other content beyond just the podcast on YouTube. I will post video clips from all of our podcasts on the YouTube channel. All of my interviews are done via video, just like this one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's on the YouTube channel. We've done some content that is like just for the YouTube channel, shorter videos, like what one of the videos I did with Chris is sort of an extension of our Dylan series was we ranked all of Bob Dylan's music videos.
Ooh.
Which is like kind of a bizarre topic because he's not necessarily known for music videos. And that one was just a lot of fun because we're kind of riffing on them. And, mm-hmm. but some of them are very good. So we're also paying tribute to like really well done pieces. So yeah, I like to do fun stuff like that over on the YouTube channel, but you can find us on social media. It's always at Play That Podcast. I can never figure out how to put rock and roll as one word correctly. Right.
Yes.
So I just decided to skip that, and it's Play That Podcast.
I love that. And I will now think of, because I went to high school in the 70s, Play That Funky Music, White Boy.
Yeah.
Now going back to a high school dance. Joe, this was amazing. Thank you so much for spending time with me. I appreciate it. Any final thoughts before we get to the Mary question?
Yes. First, thank you for having me on. You know, without being too, you know, cheesy, I'll say, I love what you're doing with this show, because I think the idea of getting fans together to talk about the music they love is like one of the core things that podcasts allows us to do. And I just like the vision you have for this show. So it's a real treat to be a part of it. And I do have something for you.
Yes.
Because this is going to be a challenge for your show. And if somehow I can assist on this, I will.
Okay.
What I have right here for those who are listening is
and watching on YouTube,
old copy of an independent newspaper from Wisconsin called Bugle. And this is the original one from March 1977. And in this newspaper is a interview with Springsteen.
Oh, okay.
But the guy doing the interview is actually a 7-year-old kid named Nathan King Schaefer. And the interview is very short. He only asks Bruce like 4 or 5 songs, and Bruce just kind of gives him some goofball answers. But, you know, you can see they took a photo together. This was published in this like lost to time indie newspaper here in Wisconsin. I have no idea if this has been captured by all of the various fan Springsteen sites. So I don't know if this is already a known entity, but I stumbled across this not too long ago and I just got a huge kick out of it. So if Nathan King Schaefer? Oh, geez. Look at me botching the name already. If that now adult man is out there, I think he would be an awesome guest for this podcast.
I absolutely agree. Nathan, if you're listening, we got to find you and get you on here. That would be awesome. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
All right, Joe. For those of you who are listening to this podcast because you are normally listening to Play That Rock and Roll music podcast, I end every episode with the Mary question. What this is Jay Armstrong, who is a recently retired English teacher. When he was teaching, he would give his class the assignment of reading Thunder Road as a poem. He would look at the lyrics, he would talk about the themes, and then he would ask them the question, does Mary get in the car? So, Joe, that is your question. Does Mary get in the car at the end of Thunder Road?
Yes. And I hope that you can tell me if someone has given this answer before, because mine is a little... Mine probably will make some people roll their eyes, but
that's
maybe
this
will connect with some people.
Yeah.
Is in my theory is that it's not when he sings you're not a beauty but hey you're all right, that is just a brutal line, and to me it's a song ultimately about settling.
Okay.
And I think the narrator in that song is someone who knew Mary and perhaps turned her down, you know, or passed her over earlier in their life. But maybe some of the women he wanted to settle down with aren't available and they're both starting to get older. And there's a level of desperation and almost pushiness on behalf of the narrator that I think is what's driving him, not necessarily a real, genuine love for her. But I also think she's in the same boat, and perhaps not the most self-confident, and she agrees to go not out of love necessarily, but perhaps out of, you know, fear of missing out, you know, concerns about getting older, you know, just the pressures of seeing maybe her friends and contemporaries going off and starting a family and all the normal human life social pressures that people at that age might find. Now, I paint all this picture because I think what this ultimately does is basically serve as a prequel for what happens in the song Hungry Heart.
Okay.
And I think the narrator in Thunder Road is the same guy in Hungry Heart. And I think Mary is the wife that he had in Baltimore, Jack.
Okay, so no one has made that connection before. So you get a shiny apple. No one's done that. I've had people say that, you know, absolutely she gets in the car or else, you know, we wouldn't go on the ride that is Born to Run. I've had people say that absolutely. And in Racing in the Street, when the line is she sits on her daddy's porch, that was the same porch she walks across. One of my favorites is that, yes, she gets in the car. They drive all the way to California. They set up a life, and Moonlight Motel is him mourning Mary's death.
Okay. Yep.
So about 60-40, 60% say she gets in the car, 40% say she doesn't. So my wife agrees with you. She thinks she hates the song Thunder Road. She thinks it's all about settling. I have the theory that, and this is not unique to me, I've been told by other people that the line "you ain't a beauty, but hey, you're all right" is because she's been saying, "Why would you want to see me? You know, blank's so much prettier. Sanks, you know, blah blah blah," and he's like, "Hey, you ain't a beauty, but you're all right, right?" It, you know, he's addressing that because she brought it up.
Sure.
Other people, I had the great Chuck Morgan, who is the voice of the Texas Rangers Stadium. And he joined.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And he talked about walk up music and how all that is worked on. It was a great episode. But he says, "I'm telling you right now, my wife said she doesn't get in the car because anyone who called her ugly would not get in the car." So that is great.
Well, it's a terrific question because it really does leave it open for interpretation. And I think my interpretation is just based on, I think one of Springsteen's strengths is writing songs about like really inherently sad situations, very painful situations, but doing so in a way that it doesn't necessarily hurt to hear it in song. You can still be a joyful experience listening to a song about a very sad subject. And I think that's a very tough needle to thread and really part of what makes them so great. You know, I think The River is a great example of that.
Yes, just like absolutely.
A very sad, but definitely like reality-based song that a lot of people definitely connect to. But if you listen to the song, I think you could listen to it with a smile. I don't think you would have to go to a dark emotional place.
Yeah. The other thing I love is I had someone, and I wish I could remember the name, but he said that it depends if it's the E Street Band doing it live, then she definitely gets in the car. Because the song ends so triumphant. And he said, when it's Bruce solo, she doesn't get in the car because he kind of ends it with the na 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 na.
Yeah.
So I said, I love that. That is great. Joe, this is great. I can't wait to have you back on again. And if you decide something that would work out well for me to join you, I'm going to be that pushy guest and say, yeah, pick me, because I've had a blast talking to you, and I do appreciate the kind words. One of the things I'm trying to do here is, you know, connections and to bring people in here and talk about why music is important to them. And so thank you for those kind words. I really appreciate it.
Likewise. This has been a real nice conversation. It's an honor to be in the great lineup of guests you've had before me. Wow. And like I was saying, you know, this is why we do podcasts, to make connections
and
to talk about this stuff that, you know, I think in our own worlds, like at least on a, you know, personal level, maybe our normal social circles are a little tired of this stuff that we like to talk about so much.
Yes.
So now we find the people who actively want to have those conversations. And
yes,
yeah, listening to your show, you are absolutely that guy. So I will definitely invite you on for something. I have some ideas.
Okay,
so good. We will stay in touch. And that I appreciate you having me on.
All right, listeners, go check out the podcast. Go like and rate and review it. It really does make a difference. I cannot tell you how much. But for now, be safe, be kind, and we'll talk to you soon. Goodbye. There we go, another episode. I'm about to go through a couple of things where you can reach me and give me feedback. So if you want to skip this, I understand. But I do hope you check it out every once in a while. I'm available on Twitter at Jesse Jackson DFW. The show is available at SetLustingBruce. You can send me an email, setlustingbruce@gmail.com. You can send me a voicemail at 469-249-2442. I am currently doing a few other podcasts. Perfectly Good Podcast, John Hiatt from A to Z, where Sylvan Groth and I discuss every John Hiatt song in alphabetical order. My Babylon 5 podcast is Last Best Hope for Conversation, where Lou Karen and I discuss every episode of Babylon 5 in chronological order. I still am doing Next Stop Everywhere, the Doctor Who podcast with my brother in time, Charles Skaggs. And then finally, How Many Podcasts, the only podcast on the internet that counts, where my buddies and I discuss pop culture. You can go to our Patreon page and support the podcast for as little as $1 a month. You can go to our Facebook page, like, and please, please go to iTunes or wherever you get your podcast and leave a 5-star rating and review for all of the podcasts that I'm doing. It's okay if you don't listen to them, but if you subscribe and rate, it really will make my day better. Thank you, and I will talk to you soon.
You just heard the fun-talking, hard-rocking, music-loving, album-ranking, fan-thinking, joy-spreading, lyric-reading, story-sharing podcast that is the one, the only, Set Listing Bruce. The theme for Set Listing Bruce was written by David Rosen, used by permission.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.